All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Bruce Castle presiding. All who have business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Good morning. We usually start on time, but they told me you were anxiously awaiting, so we decided to come on out. I'm Chief Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Lance. To my left is Judge Davis. We're here today in a special session at Mississippi College School of Law on the matter of Steve Mumford. It has a docket number of 091759. Would counsel for the parties please note your appearance for the record?
Amy Fletcher of National Veterans Legal Services Program for the appellant, and with me at counsel table at Christine Cody Hill.
Thank you.
Jessica Schwartz for the Department of Veterans Affairs, with me at counsel table, Ken Walsh.
Ken Walsh, thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed? Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 10 minutes.
That will be noted. Thank you. You may proceed.
Chief Judge, may it please the court. The question before this court today is which adjudicatory body has the authority to determine, in the first instance, whether there has been a commission of a felony for purposes of the Fugitive Felon Statute 38 U.S.C. 5313B, subsection 1B. In this case, Mr. Mumford and the board agree that in order for there to be a commission of a felony, there must be a finding that a felony has actually been committed. Where Mr. Mumford and the board disagree, however, is whether the board, acting in its capacity as a federal administrative tribunal, has the authority to make determinations of whether a felony has been committed in the first instance. In this case, the Board of Veterans Appeals usurped the role of the criminal court and determined that Mr. Mumford met all of the requirements of the Fugitive Felon Act as early as 1994, even though the Florida State Court had deliberately withheld a determination as to whether a felony had been committed.
Counsel, isn't a key question whether or not the appellant violated probation?
Yes, Your Honor, and there's no dispute in this case that, in fact, probation had been violated. The key question in this case is whether that probation had been imposed for the commission of a felony. And the clear language from the statute makes clear that it's the Florida State Court who makes that finding in the first instance whether there has been a commission of a felony. The use of the word for in the statute requires that we take a look at why the actor that imposed the probation did so. In this case, the Florida Court did not impose probation for the commission of the felony. The Florida Court imposed probation for two reasons and two reasons only. Mr. Mumford was charged with a felony, or there had been an allegation that he committed a felony, and he pled nolo to that charge. The court did not find that he had actually committed that charge, that felony.
Well, and Counselor, but retroactively, the court did find that. In 2004, it imposed a conviction.
Yes, you're right, Judge Lynch.
On the original plea in 1994 on nolo.
Yes, you're right, Judge.
And that's the process of a withheld judgment. The judge says, I'm going to cut you some slack on this felony charge, and I will withhold judgment if you do the following things religiously. If you fail to do that, I'm going to enter a finding of guilty on this felony charge. Isn't that the process of withheld judgment?
Yes, Your Honor. However, with one slight change, that the Florida court in 2004 could have not adjudicated him guilty on the charge and continued the probation. But what's relevant in this case is that that didn't happen until 2004, yet the VA suspended benefits between 2001 and 2004, a time during which he was not a felon under Florida law because this adjudication had been withheld. There was no finding that the felony had actually been committed until 2004, when he was adjudicated guilty.
Wouldn't the issuance of a bench warrant for his arrest in September of 1994 serve the same purpose?
That's
when he went into the status of a fleeing felon.
I'm sorry?
That's when he achieved the status of fleeing felon in 1994, when the judge said you've not been following the terms of probation and issued an arrest warrant for him.
Respectfully, no, Your Honor, because there had not been an adjudication of guilt on the underlying felony until 2004. The bench warrant in 1994 only served as prima facie evidence that he had violated probation. However, he still did not meet the element of having actually committed the felony in 1994. That element hadn't...
Isn't there a difference between commission and conviction?
No, Your Honor.
There's no difference between commission and conviction.
Not as used in this statute. There needs to be a finding by a criminal court, either federal or state, that a felony had actually been committed.
And why do you say that? Didn't Congress use convicted in different portions of this statute?
Yes, Your Honor, that's true.
So you're suggesting that Congress said if you violate probation before you're actually convicted, you won't lose your benefits, but if you violate a probation sentence after conviction, you would lose your benefits?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they could have easily done that by putting the word convicted in here.
That's true.
And they didn't, just so we could be here at school to argue this point.
Respectfully, Your Honor, they did, however, insert the word commission. And that word commission cannot be read out of the statute. It has to have some meaning.
Doesn't under Florida law the judge have to find that there was a commission of an offense before he can put him under probation?
The judge does have to accept the plea, and there must be a factual basis for the nolo plea. However, a nolo plea is only an admission of the facts for the purposes of the prosecution. Florida law, and this court has recognized that Florida law holds that a nolo plea is only an admission for the facts for the purposes of the pending prosecution, cannot be used against a person in a subsequent civil proceeding, which is exactly what this is. This is a civil proceeding to deprive Mr. Mountford of his constitutionally protected right.
So when he comes before a VA, he's in violation of a probation, and he argues, but I'm not in violation of a probation for a commission of a felony. That's the position?
Yes, Your Honor.
Could VA find separately that he was on probation for commission of a felony?
No, Your Honor. At every step in this in applying this statute, the VA has to look at a determination that's already been made by either the state or the federal court exercising criminal jurisdiction or the state or federal law enforcement agencies. The VA can't determine there's been a violation of probation until there's a warrant or a finding by the state or the federal authorities that there's been a violation. The VA can't make a determination that probation has been imposed until the Florida or state or federal court has actually imposed probation. And the VA cannot make a determination that a felony has actually been committed until the Florida or state or...
What do you base that on?
Well, Your Honor, it's just...
Why doesn't VA have its own adjudicative authority?
The VA does have its own adjudicative authority.
Why can't they make those determinations themselves?
The VA can't make determinations of criminal guilt and innocence, and that's precisely...
It doesn't say conviction, it just says commission.
Yes, but commission in the context that it's used in this statute is tantamount to a conviction, a finding of criminal guilt on an underlying felony. In this case, there was none, and the VA can't make that determination. Just like the VA can't determine that a veteran's behavior constitutes a violation of probation, that's left simply to the federal or state courts. The VA can't make the determination that a certain criminal offense is a felony or a misdemeanor. That's left to the state legislature and Congress.
Counselor, let's get back to reality here. Your client appeared before this Florida judge, accused of two or three misdemeanors and a felony.
Correct.
Am I right so far?
Correct.
The good judge said, you are accused of commission of a felony. you have the right to plead not guilty, you have the right to plead guilty, you have the right to plead no low contender.
Correct.
And it's my understanding that as a result of your counsel's efforts with the prosecution will not contest a withheld judgment as long as you provide the elements of the probation and comply with them. I will not enter a judgment of guilty at this moment. Am I right so far?
Correct.
All right. In September, your client is accused of not conforming to the terms of the probation. The judge indicated that he was now in an arrest status, a felony. Now, why isn't that the admission to the commission of a felony?
Respectfully, Your Honor, it's the admission to the commission of a felony effective in 2004. The statute doesn't have retrospective effect.
The felony was committed in 1994, I believe.
But that finding wasn't made until 2004. And until...
Except the judge accepted his plea of no contendere in 1994.
Correct.
And then, pursuant to the deal, imposed the probationary conditions.
Correct. But without that adjudication of guilt in 1994, Mr. Melford did not meet all the elements of the statute. Mr. Melford didn't meet all the elements of the statute until 2004 when there was an adjudication of guilt. And this statute, the plain language of the statute, only operates when all of the elements of the statute have been met. This, it uses present term language that benefits are suspended during any period during which a veteran is a fugitive felon, and a person is a fugitive felon by violating a condition of probation. The VA can't go back based on an adjudication of guilt in 2004 and apply that to the time period between 2001, when the statute was enacted, and 2004 to determine that by virtue of this 2004 adjudication, he met all the elements during that time.
Counsel, what is necessary then to determine whether a condition of probation has been violated?
It appears that the warrant alone from the state or the federal law enforcement authorities is sufficient to determine if there's been a violation. This seems to be the policy that the VA has adopted as it's published in its adjudication procedures manual. And in the record of proceedings in this case, in the letters that the VA, the regional office, sent to Mr. Melford, the regional office informs Mr. Melford that the state law enforcement authorities have identified him as a fugitive felon based on an outstanding warrant. However,
and I'm looking at a warrant that's an affidavit, actually, from the probation officer that alleges the violation of probation, and then a subsequent warrant that was signed in September of 1994. So, if I understand your argument, violation of probation was determined in September of 1994.
Correct.
And the statute says, a person who is a fugitive felon by reason of violating a condition of probation or parole imposed under commission of a felony under federal or state law.
Correct. There's no dispute that he violated his probation. There's no dispute that the charge that he received in 1994 was felony. What's in dispute is whether the probation was imposed for the commission of a felony. And our position is that it was not, because in 1994...
What was it imposed for?
It was imposed because Mr. Melford was charged with a felony and pled nolo contendere to the felony. The court deliberately withheld a determination as to whether there had actually been a commission of a felony in 1994. And therefore, it cannot be said that he met all the elements of the statute until 2004, when he was adjudicated guilty on the underlying felony. But even then, he didn't meet the elements because there was no violation of probation after that.
So why does Congress use conviction in Section A and commission in Section B?
Your Honor, it uses conviction in subsection A to discuss custody or confinement after conviction. It wouldn't make any sense for Congress to use the word commission in that subsection. It would read for custody or confinement after commission. However, if you take the words out regarding the clause regarding conviction or commission between the first two paragraphs in that sentence, you will see that it reads that you're also a fugitive felon by fleeing to avoid prosecution for a felony. If Congress had intended under subsection B that a person need only be charged with a felony in order to come within the terms of subsection B, it could have patterned the language to be the same to read for violating probation imposed for a felony under state or federal law. But Congress specifically inserted that word commission, and that word commission has to mean something. And in this case, it has to mean that the adjudicatory body that has the authority to make that determination in the first instance has made a determination that a felony was committed. In this case, that didn't happen until 2004, and the statute cannot be applied retroactively. Therefore, at no time did Mr. Mountford meet all the elements of the statute, and at no time was it proper for VA to suspend his constitutionally protected right into the continued receipt of VA benefits.
If Congress had meant conviction, couldn't they have easily written the word conviction?
That's true, Your Honor, but even if this court were to find that there's some ambiguity because of the use of the word conviction in subsection A and the use of the word commission in subsection B, the board itself found that it had to be a finding that the felony was actually committed. And that's a reasonable interpretation of that statute. Where the board went wrong, however, is that it found that it had the authority to find whether a felony had been committed. And that's what the real issue in this case is, whether the board has the authority to make the finding in the first instance that the veteran has committed a felony.
Well, Counselor, let's take your logic and assume that your client had pled guilty to the felony. And the judge said, okay, we're going to do a sentencing hearing in 3 weeks. You're released on your own recognizance. You'll come back in 3 weeks and we'll discuss sentencing. And your client takes off, doesn't come back. Is it your argument that there's not been a commission of a felony?
Yes, it's our position that there is no commission of a felony until the Florida court has made that finding, and that the plea is irrelevant. But even if this court were to find...
Wait a minute. The plea is irrelevant?
Yes, Your Honor.
Even if your client were to have pled guilty?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's exactly what this court recognized in Robinson versus Shinseki, and where this court recognized that it is not the plea, but it is the judgment of the court that is dispositive in determining whether there has actually been an adjudication of guilt. And in this case, there was none. And even if this court were to find that a plea is relevant, in this case, it wasn't a guilty plea. It was a nolo plea. And as both parties have talked about in their briefs, a nolo plea cannot be used against a person as an admission of the facts in a subsequent civil suit, which is exactly what this is.
Well, I'm not sure that this is a civil suit. Entitled to your opinion. Well, how about an Alford plea then? Let's assume that your client said, yeah, I believe that there's sufficient evidence to indicate for the prosecution to prove my guilt, and I want to preserve my appellate rights. So under the Alford decision, I'll enter a plea of guilty but preserve my right to appeal. What status would that put in that?
Again, it's our position that the plea isn't relevant. However, the Alford plea, I believe, is unique to New York State. And the board would have to look to New York State law and how an Alford plea is treated in matters outside of the prosecution to determine whether it would be sufficient in this case. But again, our position is without an adjudication of guilt, it's not sufficient.
I want to change course for just a second. As I understand, there was a decision by VA in 2004 to reinstate his benefits after clearing him as a fugitive felon.
Yes, sir.
Once that decision stood for about 2 years, as I understand it.
That's right.
How do you then change that decision? Don't you have a higher standard to take? before you can reverse that decision under 3.105? Doesn't it take clear and unmistakable evidence?
Your Honor, we're attacking the 2004 decision.
Now, I'm on a different tack here. As I read this record, I see that VA made a decision in 2004.
Right.
That became final. Then in 2006, they rendered another decision. Once a decision becomes final, doesn't VA have to approach it through a different standard? Don't they have to find clear and unmistakable error in the 2004 decision?
Yes, Your Honor. We did not pursue that on appeal because if this court finds that a withhold is sufficient, then any failure to pursue it as a clear and unmistakable error by the Secretary would constitute harmless error. And our position is it was never a valid suspension of benefits.
Let me shift tax again. What is the purpose of this statute, 5313B?
The purpose of the statute, as shown by the legislative history, is to deprive veterans, fugitive felon veterans, of the means to maintain their fugitive lifestyle while they are fugitive.
All right. So in 2004, when VA, and by the way, who is the duty imposed on under this statute? VA to not make payment?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you made reference to the Social Security statute, 42 U.S.C. 1382. Under that statute, the person is not considered an eligible individual or eligible person if they're in this status.
Correct.
In the VA statute, there's a duty on VA not to make a payment.
Correct.
Not making a payment sounds prospective, which would
Correct.
Be consistent with what you said is the purpose of the law.
Correct.
To have the person come back because they're not being paid.
Correct.
So is this statute, is the purpose of this statute fulfilled at all by looking at a period from 2001 to 2004?
That's our position. No, it's not.
Thank you. Your time is up. Any other questions?
None for me.
Thank you very much. You have 10 minutes reserved.
Good morning, Chief Judge Castle and Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jessica Schwartz. With me at counsel's table is Ken Walsh. The Secretary submits that the Board's decision should be affirmed for the following reasons.
Before you go there, follow up on 3.105. VA issued a decision in 2004. It became final, everything I can read in this record, and that was a reinstatement. And then all of a sudden, in 06, they issued another decision without following what looks like procedures under 3.105 for a revision of decision. That's been noted by the board and then ignored.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is the process for taking a 2004 decision and reversing it, in effect?
In a general situation, from what I understand, and as appellant stated, this wasn't briefed, so I'm not 100% prepared to answer this question, but from what I understand, that type of decision would refer to instatement of proper benefits, something that somebody was entitled to originally and then taken away. In this case, there was no legal entitlement. That or Congress specifically intended, took away entitlement for benefits from any veteran who violates the law. And that would be the situation in this case.
Well, that might rise to clear and unmistakable error. But isn't the standard clear and unmistakable error?
As far as I know, it is, Your Honor.
Can this court step in and make that determination in the first instance?
There hasn't been a board decision on that issue below, so no, the court's jurisdiction wouldn't rise to that. What the court may be able to do if it wanted to is it could revise the prior board decision to reflect something of that sort. If it chose to, but since there is no prior board decision, an appellant never appealed that issue, then no, the court doesn't have jurisdiction over
that. How about the second one I raised at the end there? The purpose of this statute, do you agree it was to take away the fuel, the funding that the veteran had while he was in this status?
That was one of the purposes. Another of the purposes that the VAIG pointed out at the hearing on the issue was to take away the dual burden on the taxpayer. The dual burden being initially the taxpayer is paying these benefits, but the taxpayer is also paying for the law enforcement agencies to go out and find this individual. And in this case, because the appellant had violated his probation as of 1994, from 1994 until 2004, when VA was informed by local law enforcement agencies, presumably the taxpayer.
Well, give me two points on that. First, where in the legislative history is that supported, that position supported?
It was in, as I said, the statement by the VA IG during the hearing before the Committee on Veterans Affairs.
Okay, you don't have the cite then?
I believe I do. Give me one moment. 74, it was on the page of the hearing testimony at page 74.
Hearing before Congress?
Yes. Before the Committee on Veterans Affairs.
Okay. And was there any statement by Congress saying that that was a purpose for which they actually enacted it?
There was not, Your Honor.
In fact, the only statement that they made was the one that was presented by your opposing counsel. Isn't that correct?
Congress really didn't say a whole lot about...
But they did say that, didn't they? Didn't they say something to the effect that the reason we're doing this is to stop fueling the veteran and his status?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So we know that one was accepted by Congress.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that purpose fulfilled at all by taking funds from 2001 to 2004?
It is, Your Honor, in that the veteran was, the commission of this crime, the crime being violation of probation, was ongoing throughout that entire period of time. It would be a bit of a different issue if the commission of the crime had happened and was completed before the passing of the statute.
Well, didn't this, this veteran was notified in 2004 that VA might start taking away benefits, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Immediately he shows up in Florida, immediately it's taken care of?
Within about a year, it seems, Your Honor, that was the case.
When was he notified by VA?
He was notified on April 1st of 2004. I guess it was about, Your Honor, I apologize. It was
about like zero time, right?
Yeah, it was 2 months he presented.
So the notification by VA taking away benefits, which, by the way, this statute puts an obligation on VA, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no obligation on the veteran.
Correct, Your Honor.
It's on VA, and it says, will not pay.
Correct, Your Honor.
Prospectively. So once VA gave notification, veteran showed up, veteran cleared the whole process up, it worked. What's the benefit of taking? How does taking the past 3 years fulfill the purpose as stated by Congress?
It's that the taxpayer during those past 3 years had already...
That wasn't stated by Congress, right?
I see what you're saying, to take away the
it was stated by VA, but it wasn't by Congress.
Yes, yes.
Go one further. Realistically, in this record, is there any expense by the state to get this guy? Don't his statements at the hearing refer to him going out of country, in country, getting a passport, traveling freely? Is there any effort by the state that in this record?
In 2003, the local law enforcement agencies, notified OIG, which then notified the RO. So presumably there was some expense taken at that point in time. The conversation between OIG and local law enforcement agencies.
Was that generated by OIG going out to find all these fugitive felons, which they should do because the statute said you can't pay them prospectively?
Yes, as part of the background of the statute, OIG is supposed to create, trying to think of the best way, relationships with the local law enforcement agencies whereby they share information and help of locating these fugitive felons. And that...
When did he break probation?
He broke probation 2 months after it was imposed in 1994.
Is that a continuing violation?
It was, Your Honor. From the point in 1994 until the point when he...
What's your authority that that's a continuing violation?
Under Davis, I believe it was definitely a Florida case. Under Davis, the court retains jurisdiction over anybody who's fleeing from probation at the point that he or she has violated probation.
I understand they retain jurisdiction, but is it a continuing violation?
Yes, Your Honor. The terms of the probation have been satisfied, it's still being violated.
And when this person was brought back, by the way, what was it? He failed to turn in a memorandum and he didn't pay $50 and...
There were actually five...
And he didn't get a job during that time period?
And he moved, and he didn't pay a court fee to the Crimes Compensation and Trust Fund.
And so when he came back, was any of that imposed?
He paid his fee. He was sentenced to time served. He had already served 49 days between his arrest and his eventual plea, so he was sentenced to time served at that point in time.
Do you know, was that 49 days, was it after his arrest in 2004?
Yes, it was. No, after his arrest in 1994.
In 94, so it was back then.
Yes, sir.
Okay, in 2004... When he was sentenced for the commission of the felony back in 1994, to which he pled no low contender, isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the judge imposed whatever sentence at that point in time.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, it's important to note, too, that there's no basis in the statute for finding that commission and conviction that you are the same thing. It, you know, in as criminal law goes, you will always have a commission before you have a conviction. Something had to happen to trigger charges, to trigger arrest, to trigger the state filing an information against you, as they do, as they term it in Florida criminal court. So you will always have that situation. And if we were to read into the statute, as appellant suggests, that when Congress said commission, it actually meant conviction, we will do as Your Honor suggested and create a loophole in the statute. For any felon who violates probation but pleads nolo contendere for whatever reason to that, he or she will not be deprived of benefits. And the taxpayer should not be required to pay benefits for individuals who become felons under the law.
Counsel, at what point was a determination made that probation was violated?
In 1994, 2 months after probation was imposed, when the warrant was issued for his arrest.
So when the warrant was issued, your position is that that's the point that probation was violated?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what support do you have for that?
That was the, if I understand you, that was the date that probation was violated,
the issuance of a warrant equals the violation determination.
As M21, as appellant's counsel pointed out, the VA adjudication manual requires VA to rely on the issue of the warrant of the state to determine if probation has been violated.
What's the standard for issuing a warrant?
It would be, I believe, probable cause.
What's the standard for taking away benefits?
Preponderance of the evidence.
How do those two match?
They don't necessarily.
Then the standard established by the VA in the manual is inappropriate?
It's unclear, Your Honor, but this was not raised before the court on any of the briefs by either of the parties. And further, the issue here is violation of probation. There's no question, and appellant has readily admitted that he violated probation that was imposed for burglary.
But when did he admit that?
He admitted that in 2004. Well, excuse me. He admitted that through the purpose of his nolo plea in 1994. He was adjudicated guilty of that in 2004.
He was adjudicated guilty of the underlying offense.
Of the felony. And of violating probation.
And when was he adjudicated guilty of violating probation?
At the same time.
In 2004.
Yes.
So all we have is a probable cause before then. No determination that it was more likely than not?
Not that we can see from the record, Your Honor. There is not. But this was a finding of fact that the board made, that he violated probation during this time period, based on the facts before them, based on the statements that the veteran even said that he left the country during this period of time. He has never said, raised any issue otherwise as to whether he violated probation.
Well, he did raise issues about 2004 being cleared and 2006 having the money taken back, didn't he?
He didn't seem to raise issues regarding that specific.
This is a veteran who is, 50% schizophrenia, 100% disabled?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And he comes. When 2006, when he gets this notification after he's already been cleared, he didn't make complaints about it?
Not of the timing. It didn't appear, Your Honor. He requested...
Secretary didn't bother thinking about 3.105?
It's unclear from the record, Your Honor. The veteran did, however, request waiver of overpayment, and he requested equitable...
Who denied the waiver?
I believe it was the RO, I believe. Or, excuse me, no, CMP.
Who has authority to deny the waiver?
CMP, Your Honor.
And that was delegated by the Secretary?
No, Your Honor. The delegation only goes to the Secretary to grant the benefits. So in this case, if the way the system works is if anybody below the Secretary had decided that the equity relief should have been granted, that slowly would have gone up.
So the veteran asked for a waiver.
Yes, Your Honor.
Statute gives that authority to the Secretary.
Yes, Your Honor.
This court has said we don't have jurisdiction because it's inherent within the Secretary himself to grant a waiver.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it never got to the Secretary because somebody below said no?
The Secretary has delegated the ability to... Actually, may I have a moment to discuss
this? Sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. The delegation of the power to grant goes to the Secretary. In the Secretary's regulations, he has, the Secretary has not delegated the authority to grant, and what the regulations say is they identify who below, how that system works to get up to the point of the Secretary. In this case, it wasn't an issue. It was never raised by appellant or anybody else that, you know, the issue, and appellant had a second chance outside of the equitable relief delegation issue into requesting a waiver of overpayment. He did that. He was initially denied of that. He filed an NOD. An SRC was issued, and appellant never filed a Form 9 as to that question. And in fact, when the board decision was issued, he still had another month to file his Form 9, and he didn't do so.
That's the waiver issue.
That's the waiver issue.
What about the equitable relief issue?
Your Honor, the equitable relief issue just it wasn't raised before the court in any of the pleadings. I don't have much more information than what I've already discussed with you on that question. If you'd like, I can get more information for you after the session is closed.
We'll let you know. We'll let you know.
Counsel, is there anything in the record indicating what caused the reversal of the VA's position in 2004 with respect to the appellant being initially cleared of this fugitive felon status and then back in 2006 not being cleared?
There's not, Your Honor. It just appears that somebody unfortunately made a mistake in the implementation of the statute. The only information we can have is that it was a fairly new statute. RO was trying to figure out what was going on. It still goes back to the issue, though, that Congress specifically mandated that fugitive felons do not get benefits.
Well, is it possible the RO thought that that was prospective only since it says shall not pay?
That's
and it's on the VA?
Possible. But there's no evidence of that in the record.
All right. Any other questions? Do you have anything further?
Just in conclusion, Your Honor, the Secretary submits that it was Congress's clear intent not to provide benefits to people who violate the terms of their probation during the pendency of that violation. Therefore, the Board's decision should be affirmed.
Thank you. You have 10 minutes in rebuttal.
Chief Judge, Your Honors. The Secretary seems to argue that the key issue is whether he violated probation. That's not an issue that the veteran has ever raised in these proceedings. It's whether there was actually a finding of a commission of a felony, and there was not in this case. He doesn't need a waiver because that wasn't valid to begin with. He did not meet the elements of the statute between 1994 and 2004. To the extent that the Secretary argues that there is retrospective application in this case because of a dual burden on the taxpayer in paying the veteran and expending resources in trying to track him down, the record discloses that they didn't do that in this case, that Mr. Mountford went on about his life for a decade without ever any notification that he can remember that there was a warrant out for his arrest or anything like that.
In fact, the board found that he did not have any notification.
In fact, yes, that's true, Your Honor. Found that there was no way that they could find that he was at all fleeing prosecution because he didn't know that there was a pending prosecution. And again, and the Secretary concedes that it can't make the VA can't make the determination on its own that there's been a violation. It must rely on a warrant from the state. It must rely on a warrant from the state that there's been a violation. It must rely on an order from the court that probation is imposed, and it must rely on an order of the court that a felony has been committed. It cannot go out and make the determination on its own that a felony has been committed. Yet that is exactly what the board did in this case. And it said on page 8 of the record that there are times that even though a person has not been adjudged guilty, he or she is still guilty of committing a crime. That's not a valid finding, and on de novo review, this court should reverse that finding and order that the Secretary restore benefits from the period of December 27, 2001 to May 25, 2004.
So you're arguing that a plea of nolo contendere in a criminal matter does not
amount to or is not tantamount to a finding of guilty of the commission of a crime?
Only for purposes of the pending prosecution.
And you get probation for purposes of the pending prosecution, and you either violate probation or you don't.
Correct.
And if you successfully complete the period of probation, then judgment is withheld and the matter would be dismissed. Would you agree with that?
It just remains a withhold on your record. I'm not sure if that's in
the matter. I believe it's dismissed.
Yes.
But we don't have a dismissal in this case, do we?
No, we don't.
Ultimately, we have a conviction.
But we don't have that conviction until 2004.
We have an admission by a plea of nolo contendere to the essential elements of the offense.
For purposes only of the prosecution, this
yes,
court...
which is how people get convicted of things, right?
No, Your Honor. People are not convicted of anything until the court enters an adjudication of guilt. Mr. Mouffer could have pled anything, and it could have been rejected by the court. Nothing, as this court recognized in Robinson versus Shinseki, the Florida Supreme Court recognized in Vinson versus State, and the Supreme Court has recognized in Locke versus the United States. It is not the plea that is determinative. It is the judgment of the court. And in this case, we did not have that judgment until 2004. And therefore, he could not have met the elements of the statute until 2004. And the VA could not have suspended benefits until 2004. What the VA did in this case was determine that it had the authority to determine in the first instance whether there had been a commission of a felony. And that's not allowed in the statute. And
can he change his plea at any time?
It is my understanding, Your Honor, that a defendant in Florida has only 30 days after tendering a plea to withdraw it and replace it.
So at the time he violated his probation, he could not thereafter change his plea?
It is my understanding that he did not know. However, again, it's our position that the plea is not relevant in this case, but even if it was, a plea of nolo contendere cannot be used against him in these proceedings. Again, this court has recognized it, and other courts have recognized it, as I cited in the initial brief. If Congress had anticipated that a plea of nolo contendere could be used against a veteran to prove a commission, then it could have written that into the statute, but it didn't do that in this case.
Could the court have... Instead of withholding a conviction, could the court have said, well, I've reviewed this, I accept you've already made your plea, you can't change it, but I'm going to find you not guilty anyway?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, that's what happened in Vinson versus State. The bottom line is, in this case, Mr. Mouffer didn't fit the statute until 2004. The VA was outside its statutory authority in suspending his benefits and depriving him of his constitutionally protected right and the continued receipt of VA benefits when it ordered retroactive suspension from 2001 to 2004.
When you focus on retroactive, and I think we understand your position with regard to commission, let's assume that the judge had entered a binding of guilt, put him on a suspended probation from confinement, and he broke that probation. VA learns about it in 2004. You would agree that they could stop payments going forward, I presume?
Yes, if it was a continuing violation.
Could they do what they did and take payments retrospectively, even in the back scenario I gave you? Would it fulfill the purpose of the statute?
Yeah, if I understand.
He has a finding of guilt.
Right.
Instead of throwing him in jail, they put him on probation.
Right.
He breaks probation.
Right.
So the commission issue, forget about it. You're not here on that, right?
Okay.
All right. VA, the law passes in 01. VA learns about it, his violating probation in 04. They can take it prospectively, and that fulfills the purpose of the statute because he doesn't have money to continue his probation. But by the time VA learned about it, taking it retrospectively would just be a punishment.
Correct.
Okay.
If I understand what you're saying is that by the time DA learned about it, the warrant had already, for his arrest for violation, had already been fulfilled. Yes, and that's because he was not in fugitive. Once that warrant is fulfilled, he's not in fugitive felon statute, and or excuse me, status. And the VA readily admits this, and this is VA policy in the M21-1MR. And by the plain language of the statute, it's language in present tense means that benefits can only be suspended during the time that the person is in a fugitive felon status, which, as Chief Judge, you pointed out, is not what happened in this case. They waited until after he had already fulfilled the warrant to retrospectively deprive him of his constitutionally protected VA disability benefits.
Counsel, do you agree with government's counsel that the violation of probation is a continuing violation?
Yes, Your Honor. But once again, that's not what we're... That's not what happened. That's not what
I understand your position.
Okay. And if there aren't any further questions, then I think that we can conclude it.
I don't think we have any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The case will be submitted. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise. Where is the recess?